All right. Hello and welcome to episode 329-ish. I always have to guess on these, of the Hooniverse podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Glucker. Joining me as always, or as most of the time when we can, my man, Ron Baugh.
Hey.
How are you? Hey. And we have a guest tonight, a repeat guest, Mr. Nick from DC Vintage Watches. How are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks, gents, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Howdy, Nick. Welcome.
Welcome to our, this is, you're seeing a new version of the Hooniverse podcast. You were in, what did we use before? What the fuck was it called? Zencaster. And now we are trying Riverside. So you're on our journey of new tech. And we are messing, for those of you who have commented to me, we are working with Ron's mic. Some shit. I like how he leaned in as he said it.
Yeah, I'm like tuning and turning up and down volumes and levels and gains.
Yeah,
right. Trying to figure this shit out.
And hopefully his internet holds strong tonight.
Yeah, that's could be an issue. But
right.
I'll switch to my phone and we'll figure it out.
Right. Nick, thank you for coming back. Appreciate it. Good to see you. Let's dive into a few. Actually, you know what? I don't know if Nick is having a beverage tonight, but I am. I assume Ron is. Okay, so what is everybody drinking tonight then? Ron.
Bullet bourbon.
Of course. I shouldn't even have to ask. Hey, Bullet. No, I know that Bullet's not watching this, but I'm going to pretend they are. Sponsor us. Nick, what are you drinking tonight?
I actually have something fairly pedestrian. I have a Sierra Nevada, just pale ale.
We don't discriminate. No matter what. You could have said, honestly, I have a nice tall glass of water. That is a wonderful, all the Hydro homies out there will appreciate it. And I was drinking tequila, but I switched to an Ashland seltzer. So I am in no position to. However, lavender lemonade. This shit is delicious.
All right.
I had lemonade the last episode, if you remember, mixed with vodka.
I do. I remember the alcohol my guests drink better than the shit we talk about, because that's how modeled my brain is. Let's dive into some stuff before we get to questions. I have a weird question right off the jump. I want to know if you know. Does it ever come up where people want to modify the clocks in their cars?
This question for me?
It's not for Ron. Yeah. You're the watchman.
Well, it's bad because we all like watches in cars. So.
That's true.
I mean, if what you mean, like some sort of like custom like application, like I think we talked briefly last time about that project that with Sun Kang with the rally custom mount.
Right. No, so not that, because that is like purpose built for a show car and it's awesome. I love it. What I'm thinking is, like, you know how like Infinities for a while had the cool clock, and then obviously
was it Q45? I think
Q45 had a nice looking clock.
QX56.
I remember that distinctly. I was in high school
because they were emulating. They were emulating fancier shit. You know, the higher end brands had a ticking clock where sometimes in Mercedes, it might even be an IWC. Aston, Bentley, I think.
Breitling's.
Yep. That's Breitling was a big thing with Bentley. And then Aston. And I don't know if they used Jaeger in the cars, but they might have used Jaeger timepieces in the cars. In Jaeger, I think LeCoultre was in car shit anyways. There's something about a sweeping. One thing I liked in a Bentley I drove recently, or it's been a few months actually, was you can hit a button and the center display spins to just be a basic piece of wood with the clocks, or then it hit it and spins again, and then the digital shit shows back up. Like, that's dope. Yeah. But have you ever heard of anybody, because like we modify every part of our car. Yeah. I'm surprised that we haven't figured out, oh, the watch in the dashboard of my J35 is 35 or 36 millimeters, maybe bigger than that actually, and then what would fit in there, you pop something dope in. Like, that doesn't really exist.
It's actually funny that you mentioned that, because it's something that I've been thinking about recently, and actually I messed with it a couple years ago, and like, if you'll see, I actually have it right in front of me. You see this right in front of the camera. This is actually this is a gauge from a tank, and it's a Soviet Union tank actually, and it actually has like nice Cyrillic writing on it, something like that. I mean, you can get them on eBay for, I don't know, $50 if they work. Sometimes they say they do and they don't.
Right.
They're coming from the stands from the former Soviet states. And this, you could easily put this in some sort of custom application in a dash. And it's manual wind. You know, it's this little thing right here. And you just manual wind and set it like that. I think at some point, you know, you could, some sort of electric, but I wouldn't. I don't know that I would attach it to an electrical system, although it has plugs on the back, because I have no idea what Soviet tanks used, quite frankly.
That would be dope to have some kind of vintage mechanical timepiece, so that you go out and it's not powered to the car, and you wind. I'm literally wearing a mechanical watch tonight, even though it's like a modern mechanical watch. But every morning, even if I'm not wearing it, I'll walk over and just wind it, even though it has like an 80-hour power reserve or something like that.
It's habit forming. Totally.
It is, and I don't have a fancy display for my watches, so like the automatics, I always have to like walk out, shake them, wake them up, keep them going.
I don't like using those. I've had people that will ask questions like, do you like the automatic watch winders? And quite frankly, personally, I think they're kind of a waste of money. Like, unless you buy a really nice one, which can cost, you know, two or three of them in a nice, it's like a couple thousand dollars, which I think is crazy. And the cheap ones you get, because early in my watch collecting days, like in the 90s, I would buy them, and they were like $50, and they broke in 6 months.
Okay.
Like, they were garbage.
Are the winders good for the mechanics or the health of the watch, or is it just a matter of convenience, so you don't have to reset and deal with that every time you put the watch on?
And it will depend on the watch, largely. Like, this is one of those weirdly esoteric polarizing arguments within the watch community, and it's like, do I really need to get this, do I not? Look, I've collected watches for 25 years now. Aside from those early days, I've never used it. I've never seen any difference, like, quite frankly. And like, it also depends, like, is this a watch that you're gonna, if you like have a 3 or 4 watch collection, and like, you just want to throw it on there, but you're gonna wear it 3 days from now, it might have wound down, or you're gonna be like me and you're gonna wear one, you may not wear it for like another month, but so it's like, or do you, for me, I personally like shaking that automatic watch and feeling that oscillating asymmetric rotor there. I love that feel, but I love even more that manual winding. Like, I like the, like on the King Seikos, the 45 and 44 series, I love a classic dressy watch just winding it. Like, I love that shit, like, completely. And that's part of the thrill for me.
I don't think my mic's picking this up, but I'm winding it right now.
It's pretty satisfying.
Oh, is it? All right. Yeah. There you go.
And some watches, like, there's some watches that you can both, that are automatic, but you can manual wind. You know, and it's,
It's like a PDK. Or sequential gearbox. That's pretty funny.
To get back to your question, like, I'm surprised that maybe we'll get some sort of request for that, because, like, I mean, obviously I'm in SoCal. I'm not really advertising this, but like, I know car electrical systems. Like, I started installing car audio systems in high school, and it was a side gig for me, where people were paying me to put in stereo systems. So I did that too,
despite the fact that I was colorblind and probably burned up more amps and blew more speakers than any audio installer in history.
That's why they put those lines on the wires. There's the solid color, and then there's the line on the.
Yeah, that was always tricky. Pink with the green stripe. Oh God. Like,
we got two
colors identified here.
if you get shot, you use a fingernail. It's not like you're going to get electrocuted like with your home stuff.
No, but that's funny, because I'm having a friend hopefully come over tomorrow to help me install. Speaking of car audio, not to get off track here, I'm going to bring it up, because in this episode, I didn't write in any bit for Ron and I to talk about our cars, because we talk about our shit all the time, and it's nice to not do it. But I guess I should mention it before we go on to my other questions. I did buy a very dumb, awesome thing for my Montero. I bought a Panasonic CQ VV or VX, whatever. It doesn't matter what it is, the model number is. It is a CD player / mini disc player with the meters.
Yeah.
It's brushed, like, metal. It's 90s.
It's like the perfect combination of digital and analog, and like,
dude,
70s yes. and 90s technology. It's like, can you plug in your reel-to-reel in that thing? Like, and it's fucking cool.
I guess hidden inside of it, it might actually have a tube, too. It might have a thermionic valve. And they made a version with a visible tube, which is not the version I have. So I'm going to install that in the Montero, and I am super excited, but then I was thinking about it. I'm actually really now nervous about it because it's an off-road vehicle. Like, I might absolutely destroy this by bouncing shit around the needles. If there's a valve in there, someone said if there is a valve in there, professional podcast, sorry. Thank you. Someone said if there is a valve in there and you're actually concerned about it, like, shut the radio off when you go off-roading to let it cool down. And but though it should be a small enough valve, if there is a tube in there, that it won't really matter that much anyway. But I'm putting it in the Montero, and I think it's going to be awesome. And I also think there's a good chance that I'm going to destroy this radio, like, at the same time when I think about it. But it might sound dope for 6 months.
You sent it to me. I looked it up and I searched eBay and I found like 4 or 5 more for sale, various price points. So
yes,
they're out there, but
they are.
Yeah, I hope you don't destroy it, but it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Now I don't know how skilled your friend is, but what you could do is you could do some sort of like quick release and then have like disconnector, like, or connectors that can pull out, so it just plugs in. Then you just pull the whole damn thing out, throw it in a Pelican case, throw it in the back seat, and you're done.
That's not like the it's over. So I'm clearly building the most expensive shitbox on the planet. But why stop now? It's not the worst idea I've heard. Let's just put it that way.
Of 90s is the worst shitbox on the planet. Trust me, I feel you. At least I think your windshield at least has curvature. Mine is a freaking, it's a brick wall. It's flat.
I don't think my windshield has any curvature.
But jokes aside, I remember like in the 90s, the first system that I put in my, Trooper, because the anti-skip CD technology, because, and I'm old as shit, clearly, CDs were relatively new, so that skip technology wasn't really there. So I had to relocate, because it used to be on any one of, you know, the five people in your listeners that actually know what the interior of a Trooper looks like. There's a dash, and then there's this little, like, afterthought thing that slides underneath the dash, and that's where the radio went, but it was prone to skipping. Like, so anytime you went off-roading, and I did a hell of a lot more off-roading back in the day than I do now, I just don't have the time, but I do it as much as I can, but I took that out and then moved the AC controls underneath,
like,
and then put the CD player where the AC went, and it worked.
Hell yeah.
Now I regret doing that because I cut a lot of metal in there.
Oh.
Now the dash is sagging and it looks very sad. And I need to get my ass in there and do some work on it.
That was a popular mod for Fox bodies. We'd switch the HVAC controls with the radio so that you'd have more depth. And like, if you had like, you know, if your radio had like a preamp or any sort of like, you know, obviously RCA connections and stuff, there'd be more room up above where the HVAC controls were. So my buddy that like got me the job installing car stereos, like, he built like this crazy Fox body that he still has, like, built out all the interior panels and stuff, and that was like one of the first things he would do is switch the radio and the HVAC controls.
That makes sense. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
The thing that got me thinking about the clocks is there's a Montero owner I follow on Instagram who's like bringing his Montero back to factory, and it's amazing the stuff he's doing. But he wanted to swap. Interestingly, all the gauges in the truck glow orange, and then the clock, which is like a little quartz clock, is green. And he found one, and he's tried like 3 different ones online. He bought and like, nope, still green, still green, still green. And he found one, and he figured out how to change the colors, and he found an orange one to match the rest of it. Yeah. Nice.
That's the dedication we all have towards these random esoteric things, I swear to God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Now, speaking of modifying stuff, I've toyed with the idea of modifying that Seiko I got from you just because it'd be kind of fun to do. And it's like modifying something there's a lot of. So it's not like I would be destroying something beautiful and rare. You know what I'm saying? But what are your thoughts on modified watches? Because I was recently on Matt Farah's podcast, and he bought a modified. He has like two modified watches, but one of them has this like Tahitian pearl color that's absolutely gorgeous, and the price wasn't crazy at all. And so it has me thinking. And the Seiko Modern community is huge.
Oh yeah, I think that's like Matt's favorite color, if I remember correctly. From
I think so.
Like that design. No, so this is really like a Seiko question, as you said, because like Seiko community, it's very huge because everything is so modular in the way that Seiko does their stuff. And the price point, it's not selling the same price point as like Rolex, just to throw out something random. So you can do it relatively inexpensive, and but it can be polarizing. For me, I love the modding myself. You know, if you're selling something that's modded, like because people move their watches on or whatever, it's clearly not original. So it's like, I mean, obviously you want to be transparent, but even if you're not, it's clearly not original. And case in point, like right here, I don't know if you can see it, but this, it looks like, it's not going to focus, but it looks like for all intents and purposes to be like a Rolex, right?
Right.
But it's actually a Seiko dialed like submariner homage, and it has like the Comex on it. And like I posted a picture of mine. We just picked up one. I'm gonna probably sell one, you know, this week. Dude, they're really cheap, but I picked up mine and I wore it and I posted it, and I actually got some angry like DMs. Like,
oh really? Hold on. Ron has some action.
And I'm just like, dude, it says Seiko on the dial. It's clearly not Rolex. There's no fakery going on. It's not purporting to be something it's not. Everyone knows it's not. You know.
Right, Ron. I'm what was just going on,
dude? I don't know. Some dude just drove by, and like stared at me through my window, my open window, and he backed up. He went past and then backed up and stopped and stared at me and then waved and drove off. I'm just like, my neighborhood is so creepy and so weird and fun at the same time. Like, I'm just like, I waved at him and I was just like, can I get back to this now?
Click. Bye.
Ronnie's a big German Shepherd, like I got on my house.
Yeah.
So I have these basically storm shutters. They're aluminum shutters that are powered, so I just shut the world out. So
no, that's I love it. I love it.
I don't know if they're bulletproof, but we may find out tonight.
I don't think aluminum's going to get the job done, but so all right. So let's move on to the topic I know you want to talk about. Actually, you know what? I'm going to back up. I'm going to wait. I'm going to keep it positive first.
But no, I mean, on the modding thing. Like,
yeah, sure.
I embrace it. I think it's amazing. I remember Matt, actually, when he did that Watch and Listen podcast with Cameron Weiss of Weiss Watches.
Yep.
I think the name of the dude's company was like Average Bros or something like that. He had an episode, and all they did was talk Seiko modding. And it was a great episode. Like, I really enjoyed it for that reason. And, like, look, not everyone can afford Rolex. I get it. I don't. I mean, I got kids' college funds to pay for, you know.
Like, I can't afford a Rolex, but I have one.
Well, then there's that too. But I'm saying, like, you can have.
I can't afford one, and my dad never afforded one, and my grandpa never had one. So I'm so.
Well, I get one at some point. I mean, I like the GMT, like the old school, like Pepsi GMTs. God, those things are gorgeous.
Yeah.
But right now, it's just not for me. But in the meantime, if I like that style, I'm going to get a modded watch that may look like it. I mean, anyone who looks at it will know it's not a Rolex, so I'm not trying to fool anyone. I'm not trying to stunt on anyone. Like, it's for my own enjoyment. And that's what, personally, I get watches for. I honestly, I love our customers. I love my Instagram followers. I don't give a shit what they think about my watches. I love them for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like watches and cars, man. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get what you like. Forget what anybody else thinks. If you're buying to impress somebody else or just to say that you have something, you're totally missing the point.
I would have sold that Trooper in the late 90s had I thought what other people thought.
I didn't buy my Montero because I thought it was cool at the time. I bought it because I'm like, I can make this cool and I can make it mine. And now all of a sudden there's a few that, you know, there's a handful, not because of me or anything. There's people doing Montero shit long before I came along. But it's raised the visibility of a little bit. And speaking of, how is the Trooper doing?
Yeah. Well, real quick, there's actually... There was this audio shop in Columbia, Maryland, shout out Audio Connection, and I used to, like, I was there all the time. This isn't, like, right when I got my license, so, like, 10th grade, and I used to go there all the time. They got so sick of me, but I'd be like, could I sweep your floors? Like, I want to learn, you know, like, those kind of things, and, like, one of the guys, he's now the manager, he's the general manager, they have like four or five stores throughout Maryland, actually had a Montero, and it sat for like 10 years in their parking lot. I think he finally sold it, and I gave him so much shit for that, and I sent him your page, and I was like, this could be you, but it's not. He got so mad at
me. My first real like car audio experience was I had my first car was a Honda Prelude, 87 Prelude.
Nice.
And my parents were divorced, and my mom, I maxed out my credit card in college, which was like had a $500 limit. Yeah, totally. I maxed that bitch out. I think I owed like $700. And then my mom won a scratch ticket for $10,000.
Oh shit.
And she cashed it in. And this is how much money we didn't have. It messed up my financial aid the next semester because it slightly changed her tax bracket. That's how much money we didn't have. But she paid off my credit card. And then I'm like the next day, I drove back to school and put a system in my car and maxed it right back out. But it was like a Sony Explode head unit and like four speakers. And man, I got all four wheels off the ground of that Prelude. That thing was the shit. But I've talked about it on the podcast before. My parents made me sell it because my first semester, my grades were so bad. And I was there on an academic scholarship where I had to maintain a 3.0. And we needed that money for me to go to school. And my first semester, I got a 1.7.
Oh, shit.
Which you like have to try to do that bad. And my parents were like, you're clearly out driving your car too much. I'm like, yo, that thing, I didn't say yo. I'm like, yo, pops. No, I didn't want to tell them that thing has an inch of dust because I'm just drinking every day. Like, fuck that car. I'm not driving.
Actually, I'm being safe. I'm being safe.
They made me sell it, and whoever bought it loved the car, and he drove it back up in Boston. He drove it, and that winter, the cable clutch froze and snapped, and he didn't care. He loved the car. He's like, because it had that Sony Explode sound system in it. Oh, that car is the shit.
I can't believe you got that out and pawn it.
Dude, yeah. I once got eight people in it, in an 87 Prelude. College was
the adventures I think we all could tell of like I'm actually genuinely terrified of my children. They're nowhere near being of the age to get a license,
right?
But if they are even remotely like I was when I was 16 through let's be honest my mid-20s, like I don't want them anywhere near a car. Like I'm just like, how did I live, man?
No,
and they give me their statute of limitations on some things I'm not going to talk about, but like just
Yeah, the first day I drove by myself, well, maybe it was the second day, but basically the first opportunity I had to drive without, you know, one of my parents in the car was, like, one of my friends in high school had a party, so it was also the first day that I drank and, like, really, like, partied. You know, it was like a sleepover party in the woods, and it was fucking amazing, but it was just like, this is everything that I dreamed of.
Yes.
And like, I got all this freedom like instantly. Right. And
yep.
It was, you know, downhill from there, but I'm just like, oh man, my poor grandparents, like
I'm trying to remember.
They didn't know.
I was one of the first of my friends to get my license, and I got it like near the end of ninth grade. And like I think I said this before, my first car was a 1986 Chevy C10 half ton.
Yes.
But back then everyone like clowned me. They're like, why do you have this pickup truck? What's wrong with you? And now people are like, this is awesome, especially out here in Southern California.
Wait, where did you grow up? I forgot.
So out in the suburbs of DC. I didn't move to DC until after college.
Mid-Atlantic, like it's South adjacent. In the South, like that would have been like the perfect first vehicle. Nobody would have questioned. Most of the kids that I went to high school with, even some like girls drove pickup trucks.
So, this actually was this is Columbia, Maryland, so technically it is south of the Mason-Dixon, so for what it is. But I got pulled over a week after I had my license. My friend Ned and I, actually still friends, you know, he actually lives in the valley.
What up, man?
We were going to the mall, and I got pulled over by a cop because they thought I was too young to drive. And I had like legit license, I had everything. They pulled me over. You just searched the car, because of course, you know, I didn't know any better. We didn't do anything wrong. We just like... But anyway, yeah, and then they're like, all right, get the hell out of here. So, yeah.
Man, remember when cops used to do that, though? Well, I'm speaking for the two white people on the podcast, Ron. Well, you did have a police officer father.
Exactly. Because Like that was my experience. I was the unicorn of my group of friends. But I had little fear of getting arrested or pulled out of the car or anything because my car was registered to my grandfather, who was a retired assistant chief of police.
The reason I bring that up is because there's something in Irvine, which is the town over from me, made the news where some kid was doing donuts in an empty lot in his Miata. And some resident, like an empty, wide open lot. I think it was like near the Great Park of Irvine, which is a huge wide open space. And some resident came out and filmed him, called the cops, and they arrested him and charged him with a felony.
They didn't arrest him on site. They got his license from the video.
Is that what it was?
His license plate from the video. They found him like a day or days later and went to his home and arrested him and impounded his car and charged him with a felony, right?
Felony.
What was a felony? Was it like endangering people or something?
No, because
like
nobody was in the parking lot. I think it was a felony destruction, felony vandalism.
Oh yeah, because they said Irvine was like
$3,700 worth of damage to the
painted lines.
Yeah,
which is
don't ever go up in the mountains. Like people are doing donuts all the time up there, and
doing donuts everywhere. Bro.
The thing about Irvine is it's basically owned by a company called the Irvine Company. Which is a money printing bullshit factory. And this poor kid, I feel terrible because like back in the day, I grew up, in a snowy country where if the snow fell, you had your license, no one else was on the road. You went out and you learned how to control oversteer. This had me thinking, this whole incident has me thinking where I want to partner with some of the younger people on the police force who maybe get it. And so maybe some of the old ones who get it too. I don't want to discriminate by age, but like this kid shouldn't have been charged with a felony. The neighbor, the resident, the person who called sucks ass. I understand why they did it, but fuck them. I would love to partner with them and create a place where we can take people who have their license, younger people, teach them fun, controlled driving things, because controlling oversteer is actually a really good skill.
Totally.
Where I want to, throughout the class, with the help of the police department that's there, I want to be like, listen, we are going to teach you things that we do not want you to use on the road. We're giving you a space to explore that. You can't just go to your local roundabouts and blah 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 blah. But should something arise where you need to do emergency lane changes or this or that, this is a good skill that will translate to you being a better driver. And I want to find a way to team up with local law enforcement and be like, listen, the police are here because they want you to be better drivers.
Right.
We want you to have some fun because cars are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this together. Let's do it right. I think
you'd get support from so many different people in the hobby and in the industry. I mean, it's just finding a space and finding an agency that's willing to participate. And I think you could easily convince even Irvine PD. Like, I work in Irvine and my truck got broken into in Irvine last year. And I have to give tremendous kudos to Irvine PD because my truck got broken into. Nothing was stolen except for my license plate and registration. But clearly somebody had like spent the weekend in my truck. I'd left my truck at the office over the weekend. And I don't think we ever talked about this on the podcast because it happened before we even started recording. But somebody broke into my Tahoe and spent the weekend in there, left a bottle full of piss and like rifled through everything, organized my receipts for me, but didn't steal anything except for my license plate, my front license plate, which I had in my dash. And like, it's the only thing that could be tied back to this crime, right? Like, you know, it was pretty foolish, but anyway, Irvine PD was at our office within 15 minutes of the call. Within 30 minutes, they had like a forensic specialist come out and dust the entire truck for prints. And there were plenty of prints. Like this fool just like touched every single surface and like, even in like the truck was super dusty, like touched every panel on the truck. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I don't touch my truck. So those are going to be his prints.
We got it. Yeah. I got a clear dick print from where the pit came out. This guy's, we got him.
I'm surprised they trotted out the, because usually unless it's like a felony, like, you know.
Yeah, dude. Law. Like, I'm like, man, y'all don't fuck around. But obviously, there is nothing going on in Irvine.
There's nothing going on,
right? Yeah. So like, they had resources and they applied them. They took the report. They filed the report, and like a month later, this dude got pulled over and in a stolen vehicle and had my license plate on him. I don't know if it was on the car or in the car or whatever, but anyway, you know, they basically made an arrest, and like I got a call from Huntington Beach PD, actually. It was just like, do you know this person? I said, absolutely not. Nope, never heard of him. Would he have any reason to be in your vehicle? Nope. You sure you didn't allow him in your vehicle? Your vehicle wasn't locked, wasn't unlocked. I said, bro, like, the guy stole my license plate. Like, what's up? What do I got to do? He's like, okay, well, you know, it's going to go into evidence and he's going to go to trial. Do you want to press charges? I was like, I don't want to press charges, but they're like, you want him to go to jail, right? I was like, yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, like, I don't really care, but like, if he was in a stolen vehicle, I feel like that's a bigger deal. Yeah, like, I just want my license plate back, really, because it's a personalized plate. And it was just like, if I had to report, I never reported it stolen. I mean, obviously there was a report, but I never like reported the DMV that it was stolen.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't just replace it. They would make me get a new plate. So I wouldn't be able to get my same plate. So I was
really?
Shit. Like, I was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to ride with no plate. And, you know, if I ever pulled over, I got a police report. But, I mean, Irvine is, you know, I feel like it's virtually crimeless. So it's like everything is a big deal to them. And I don't know, like, maybe we could work with them. Maybe we could reach out, you know, as a commercial resident of Irvine, Wheel Pros. Maybe we can make contact and see if that's something we could set up. But I just don't know where, you know, we'd conduct something like that. I'm sure there's got to be some huge parking lot somewhere.
We could do it at the fucking Great Park where the kid was filmed.
Well, if their concern was damage to the lot, damage to the lines, like,
dude,
clearly
we will pay to repaint the fucking lines if we get the support of so and so.
You know, well, but I just wonder, I feel
our
like...
Our sponsors will.
Yeah.
Get like some sort, like, you could get like someone like Sun King or Daniel Wu, who are like obviously big in the community, to like,
right.
They might be interested in something like this. That might be, that'd be pretty cool. Because I know from some of my conversations with Sun, like, he's all like, he's real big, and I love him for this, he's real big about giving back to the community, because right. It's like, you know, he, obviously that's like something that he has come to love, and it's not just, you know, the Fast movies. It's just like, the dude is genuine. Like, you see like any of his Instagram accounts, he loves building these cars. I've seen him do it. He'll sit there and he'll watch some of these guys work in like just object fascination, you know, like many of us, just like, you know, they're doing stuff to the Doxy or whatever his car, and it's
right.
He might be interested.
Ron, you can still hear us, right?
Yeah, totally. Why would you do?
Okay, cool. It just says your camera is disabled due to slow internet connection, but it still says it's still recording your video, so
sweet.
We're fine.
Okay.
That's all. So we just can't see your beautiful face. Yes.
I see his beautiful face.
Oh, it's not on my screen. So I agree with you. Sun Kang would be a great resource. I've never done anything with it, but a couple years ago I bought the URL. I might have mentioned this, but I actually don't know if I mentioned it while recording. I should stop drinking during these. I own the URL Horsepower for Humanity because I was inspired by a group called Stoked.org, which their mission is to get board sports in front of kids who don't have access to it. It's a very niche charity, but I think their mission is pretty awesome, and they have ambassadors, and they do cool, like, they take kids surfing who would never see a surfboard or the beach in their life. They take kids to skateboard, and so like, it's just a really fun way to like get people involved in things maybe they want to do and they would never have access to do. And I kind of, my idea initially was the same idea with Horsepower for Humanity, is to bring really cool car shit to people who don't get to see really cool car shit. So I've just kind of been sitting on the domain, and maybe this could be the impetus to turn it into something more. Maybe I should figure out how to do 501(c)s and all that shit. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So back to the other stuff, because now we got to go negative with Nick. So recently,
I'm going to refill.
Recently, Omega and Swatch, which are owned by the same parent company, correct?
Yes, LVMH.
Wait,
Now I've got to look it up.
Not anyway. Luxottica or... either way, they have the same parent company. That part is correct, right?
Or you're confirmed? Yes, correct. They are definitely owned by the same entity.
It's either Luxottica or LVMH or... Either way, the two of them collaborated on a watch built under the Swatch brand with...
Let me back up. Sorry. Sure. Not LVMH. It's actually Swatch Group. I knew this in
a... Oh, Swatch. Okay.
Swatch Group owns Omega and like a crap ton of other, like, under its umbrella. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's even funnier for me.
Because
yes. Swatch is like, hey, Omega, we're doing this.
Yeah.
So they collaborated on a run of a handful of watches. I didn't dive...
Sorry to interrupt again. I'm really sorry. So Swatch Group owns Blancpain, Balmain, Brigot, Hamilton, Glashow Original, Omega, Rado, Swatch, Swiss Timing, Tissot, and like 10 other watch companies.
Jesus.
So it's like Volkswagen. Like Volkswagen owned Bugatti.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know how
all the casinos in Vegas are owned by basically like four 100%. Casinos? That's right. How the watch industry is. Contemporary watch industry, there's like four or five, I think I'm being charitable, I think it's less than that own freaking everything.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that until tonight.
Like Swatch, LVMH, which is Hoyer, and then it's Seiko, and then like Spanish. Anyway.
LVMH is also like Louis Vuitton, right?
Yeah,
too?
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
And is Luxottica even still a brand? Do they still own like Quiksilver and shit like that? Yeah, there's like four things that own everything in the fashion area. That's hilarious. I didn't know they own all those other brands too, though. So
yeah, they actually own Calvin Klein, because I know you like your Calvin Klein watches. I'm joking.
Okay, I was like, what?
In your face right now, like, what the hell is
I have like
talking about you, dog.
Right?
Fashion watches. They own a bunch of fashion watches.
CK1. they collaborated, Swatch and Omega, and the internet blew up because, one, the internet loves drops.
Yeah.
Thankfully, this wasn't going to be a drop, but people treated it like these were limited edition, in-store only, limited stores. Swatch watches with Omega branding tied into their space-based watches, mostly, I believe, including a Uranus one, which, you know, whatever. I pronounce it Uranus. I don't care how everybody pronounces it. You can say Uranus. I'm not against it. They sold out instantly. They were being flipped for crazy money. And then Swatch was like, yo, we're going to make more of these. Fucking cut the shit. But hardcore watch people like our friend Nick and our friend Matt Farah fucking hate these watches. Where I, as a casual watch fan, was like, that seems fun. Tell us. I'm going to open the floor, Nick.
Yeah.
Explain why you vehemently hate this. And you do vehemently is fair.
Will you do me a favor and just include like a technical description of the watch and like why it is, what it is, and how it's
Oh, he's
going to
go into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to caveat everything here. At its MSRP, which is, I believe, $299.99, I think it's fine. It's plastic, it's quartz. Obviously, us watch purists, to be completely transparent, I own some quartz watches. They're all like in the early 80s. They tend to be
looks like it hurts you to say that.
So, yeah, there's that. Yeah. But it's quartz. It's plastic. It's made to be disposable. And that's Swatch's shtick. That's always been their shtick since way back in the day. Since they were founded, really. But when you have these unscrupulous individuals, and I'm going to call them that, but I guess they're serving a market and they're selling them for like $5,000 on freaking eBay. I take issue with that because it's like really, $5,000, you could get a legit Omega Speedmaster.
Right.
That. Like a mechanical, probably like a 145, a Ref 145.0022, like a Speedmaster Professional, not even the smaller reduced variants. So I just don't get it. And then it's like, there's always these people that are, chasing that hype beast. You know, they're like, everyone has it, so I got to get it. That kind of stuff. Look. Those don't tend to be the people under watches. It's just for status. Cool. Go for it. I mean, if someone is money and all that, that's my opinion.
Right.
If you're going to buy it because it's this, if you're buying it because you think it looks fun, you like that it's got a little bit of tie into the space thing, and you're buying it for the MSRP, and Swatch said early on, this is not a limited edition.
Right.
We are going to make more of them. It's like when Timex came out with the Q-Watch, and it's like they're mining their back catalog. It's like this Pepsi bezel. It's kind of cool. They made it back in the 70s. Those went apeshit. The internet went apeshit for those. Not to the same level of the collaboration between Swatch and Omega, but and they were selling for triple or quadruple what it, you know, MSRP for, and people were, you know, trying to flip them for that extra money. You know where those people are now if they try to flip them? They're not making that money because Timex kept pumping them out.
They're just trying
to catch up to demand.
So you're I don't want to say disgust because that's too strong, but your dislike of the watch collaboration doesn't lie with the original retailer. It lies with the resellers.
Well, it's yes and no. So there's that part of it. And then there's the other thing, like then you get to the watch, call it snob, if you will, watch snob, purist, whatever in me. Like this plastic thing will never be an Omega Speedmaster.
Sure.
And like that history is so pure. And granted, like, you know, I will talk garbage or I will talk shit about Omegas in their like their love of always touting that the fact they're official watch of the NASA space program nonstop. But if I were them, I'd be doing the same thing. But, you know, there's other brands that have that connection to the space program.
Seiko.
But, you know, it's – I think – I was kind of surprised Omega made that decision, and then you realize, like you brought up, it's the same company. So, like, I would love to know, you know, New York Times or whichever investigative journalist – not a watch journalist, but, like, New York Times, Washington Post, whatever – was there pushback by Omega? You know, what, or was it just like, yeah, whatever you want, I'm trying to get a promotion, make it happen, we'll make a lot of money, sell out our heritage, so be it. But then the counter to that will be, at the MSRP of $300, it might get more people interested in watches. And that's a win, I think, for the community as a whole. I would have loved it if it would have been a mechanical movement, because God knows we need, like, hundreds, if not thousands, more watchmakers to be trained. Because it's a shortage that our love for watches expands, they all need to be serviced at some point. And we have a dire shortage of watchmakers. So, like, yeah.
So it's a throwaway item with the Omega name on it, and that just doesn't jive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, can see that.
On it.
At $300, it seems really cool.
No, it is. Right. And look, at $300, like, the all-plastic watch is not really my – that's the other thing. I'm not really a fan of that. But that's my personal opinion. But I think if you're, like – if you're new on the watch scene, you're, like – you like the fact that it has the Omega Speedmaster connection, and it's $300. You're not paying $5K. It's $300, and it's, like, you don't know a lot about watches, and it piqued your interest, go for it. And it, I'm all for that. And if it brings you down that slippery slope, that rabbit hole of horology, all the better. I love that. And maybe one day you'll knock on our door, maybe not. You know,
Ron's a big horologist.
Jesus Christ.
That's like the Uranus thing. Like, it's yeah, I dude. Never fail.
Uranus. Who the hell says Uranus, bro? Come on.
I also say
sanctimonious. Finance.
I also finance? Say finance and not finance.
But it's like,
because I'm a New England elite.
Okay.
Bear has posted on these things a couple times on his account, and, like, man, I mean, normally it's fun reading the commentary on his posts, but it really, like, the watch dorks like myself really came out on both sides.
It's been the vitriol aimed at these watches is wild.
It is. It is. There's not a lot of people that take the, because, like, even though I strongly dislike it, I do see the merit.
Yeah.
You know, I
appreciate that.
One or the other. It's very polarizing. It's black and white. There's no nuance. There's no gray area.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there should be. But
I agree with that. Let's move on to questions. We got some good questions tonight. First one on Twitter is from our friend Bradley Brownell. And this is funny because he hates watches, but he wrote, "I need a watch to wear with a suit every day at my new job. I'll be interacting with wealthy car collectors and would like some new statement pieces to add to my collection.
Okay,
currently, I have a Shinola Runwell, a gold all-metal G-Shock, which I want one of those, and I had a chance to buy one at a good price from Farah, and I balked, a Sub-Date Hulk, and an Autodromo Group B. Please also recommend some good straps."
Okay, well, I'll start with the easy, the strap thing. I get that question a lot because, I mean, obviously we don't sell straps, but you know, we like watches. I like Crown and Buckle. They're based out of Florida. They're Black Label. They're Black Label leather straps are amazing. I've got maybe seven or eight on watches in my collection. I love them. They age very well. There's another one called Two Stitch Straps, and you can find them on Instagram. I like they have like this reversed, like I don't have one in front of me, but it's like a reversed like leather strap, and it's like kind of distressed, so it looks kind of cool on like military watches. And then Bullang and Sons, and everyone's heard of them. Well, a lot of people have anyway. They're based out of, I think, Italy. They're based in Europe, but they make very nice leather straps. That's probably the highest price point out of the three. From what I understand, they used to make the straps that Houdinki would sell at a markup. Exact same straps. They made them for Houdinki. I don't know if they still do. That was what the rumors were. I don't know if they're still true. And those, let's see. So I think Black Label will be about 50, 60 bucks. The Crown and Buckle, Two Stitch is about the same. Bullang will be maybe $90. It's all quality leather. I love theirs. All three of them make quite excellent straps.
I'm trying to remember. I just bought one off Etsy. It might be this one. Let me see if I can find the strap because I forgot we have the ability to share screens here, which is fucking fun,
Moving on up.
right? So let's see. Can you guys see that?
It's black. It's blank for me. Oh, there it goes.
Oh yeah, there it is.
So I think it's these guys. Let me, yeah, this British company, Watchstrap Central UK, really good prices on NATOs, and I just have bought this exact strap is what I have on my Seiko right now, and I absolutely love it. So
And
there's a
that's
lot of.
important too, because you'll get some cheap NATO type straps made out of nylon, and they'll come from overseas and they'll be garbage. Like the stitching will come out, it'll be cheap nylon. And then this one, I mean, obviously, I mean, I don't have one of these, but I can tell just, you can usually tell just by looking. If you, like me, and you look at watches and straps literally all day, every day, that looks like it's high quality. I know I will always plug for Uncle Seiko. That makes, I mean, if some of their stuff works in Omega too. They make exquisitely high quality stainless steel bracelets that will be modeled after the original. And I love Larry. He's the guy that owns it. Like, I count him as a friend of mine. Well, actually, we put a lot of our watches on his bracelets, and like they're copies of the original vintage ones from the 70s, and he does them better than the originals. They're better quality. They're like better stainless steel, like thickened links. But yeah, but the thing, like, actually, little interesting side note, there is a gentleman, and I use that term loosely because I do not consider him a gentleman, based in Ohio, because Ohio, and he has trademarked the term NATO as NATO strap. He's trademarked the term G10, which is how the Brits refer to NATO straps. And if you go on eBay and you sell anything with NATO referring to a watch, he will get your shit taken down. When we started back in 2012, we started on eBay. And anytime, I wasn't even selling NATO straps. We were selling watches, and I would say, it comes with a NATO strap. He would get my listing taken down. And he actually, I know strap companies that are based in the United States, and if you look, and they use that term, if you look in the fine print, it will say the NATO is trademarked by this guy, and they have to pay him to use that term. And it's like an onerous, it's like 10% of every strap they sell goes to him.
So we need to come up with another term and fuck that guy.
And I'm just like, it's NATO, it's North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's just
Right. How can anybody own a trademark on that?
insulting to me. Like, this is just, but I digress.
I get
Sorry
it.
about that. It's just
No,
like,
that's a good digression. That's crazy. So there you go, Bradley. Lots of good strap choices.
But watches, as far as
Oh,
watches
yeah.
go, and that's it's interesting because, like, I don't know, and you guys will know this better than I do because I'm relatively, even though I have this long love of cars. And you've seen some of my cars that I've owned, like, are now, like, you know, the Chevy and the Trooper, et cetera, the Integra. These are all cars that people seek now, which is crazy to me. But I'm relatively a neophyte when it comes to automotive compared to you guys. So, you know, in the watch community, there will be some snobbery. Sometimes not. Sometimes there will be. Sometimes people buy Rolex just for the name. My wife has a friend that is married to a lawyer. And my wife remembered this one time where he's like, look, a Rolex. Ooh, look. And my wife, I love her. I was like, so what kind of automatic movement is it? And he was like, look, a Rolex, because he knew nothing about it. He knew the name. So it depends on the clientele. Like, I mean, are these guys that are just buying because it's like a Porsche 911 and it's a rare one? Or is it like they dork out like everyone in this conversation does on automotive? And that will be the thing. Rolex will always
be. Because Bradley could run into the guy who has the Rolex, but then he sees like some cool Seiko on his wrist. He's like, is that a Pogue or you know?
He said it, not me. I'm not trying to hawk my stuff on your listeners. Thank you for that, by the way, though.
Well, talking to you for how long we've talked, you know, over the last, 2 years or whatever, has made me dive deeper than I would have expected into a world I cursory cared about. And so, like, I notice things now, and I care about more about a few things. And I've never been a Rolex guy. I appreciate them. I know they're amazing. I've always preferred Omega, honestly, because of the space thing. Which, you know, you mentioned earlier.
I agree. Yeah.
So,
I like the Rolex, like, connection to, like, the Special Forces community. I think that's pretty badass. Like most. I think that's pretty cool. But no, I mean, so there'll always be, like, it depends on what his clientele are, you know, really. And it probably runs the gamut, the whole spectrum. So, you know, honestly, Shinola, I don't like.
Right. A lot of watch people don't like them.
It's for me, it's also their whole, like, and they won't come out and say this, but the whole, like, we saved Black Detroit. No, you didn't. Look, don't get it twisted. You're providing some jobs. You're not single-handedly lifting Detroit up. So don't.
Well, isn't the whole narrative bullshit anyway? Like, they're not, like, they weren't from Detroit.
It's owned by the guy that owns Fossil, I think.
Like, they looked at Detroit and were like, oh, we can co-opt this. Like, wasn't that the narrative?
It's marketing. I mean, it's that PR spin, and I give them props for, they spun it well. You know, like I said before, they gave it to the Clinton family, and the entire 2016 campaign, the entire family was rocking one on the wrist.
I bought into it. I thought it was a brilliant marketing campaign. I thought the watches, I have one that I bought off my brother-in-law from his pawn shop, which is the same place I bought this Hamilton.
That's right. Yeah.
For like nothing. It's broken. Yeah. I need to send it in, but
I heard that.
And I thought it looked cool, but I was talking to a watch snob about it, and he's like, I would never buy that. I'm like, it cost me $200. He's like, oh, that's a good price. I'm like, yeah.
Well, the FCC, look, and the whole thing is that, like, back in before the quartz crisis in the 70s, which ironically was brought about by Seiko because they invented the first quartz watch in the late 60s, early 70s, America had a vibrant watch community, like watch manufacturing community. They had dozens of companies until they were run out of business by the quartz crisis because they made it cheaper. So, you know, for Shinola to kind of be trading on that, but then yet the FCC came and smacked the crap out of them because they made it, their marketing campaign was to be like, it's made in Detroit. No, you assembled it in Detroit. It was made overseas. You brought it in here and you assembled it in Detroit.
Right.
That's why it says assembled now for that reason.
Right. Car manufacturers have had to do for decades. Yep. If you look at window stickers, it says part content assembled, all that shit. So to sum up, Brad,
I would get a Speedmaster. You don't, either Rolex or Speedmaster, because both of them are instantly iconic. Everyone's going to recognize them, and it's going to show that he has, you know, he paid attention to that, and like he put some thought into it. So maybe he's going to put some thought into the business that he does with these wealthy individuals in that same care and thought. I mean, it's messaging because, look, with men, we don't have a lot of choices when it comes to, particularly in Southern California. When I lived in D.C. and I worked for the government, I had tailored suits. That was my thing. I enjoyed a nice tailored suit. I still do. Nobody wears suits in Southern California unless you're
hell no. That's why we moved here.
And I miss that. I miss that. Me, I miss wearing a suit, but it is what
I get
it. I trade it for the weather any day.
Yeah.
Watch is the instant when I meet someone, again, obviously I'm biased, I'm looking at what's on their wrist. And his people are probably doing the same thing. If you're into cars, the automotive and the watches are so very closely intertwined. They're going to look at that and they're going to notice it. So that would be, I would say Rolex, or I would say Speedmaster. And if it's going to be Rolex, maybe a vintage like Datejust, which is, I don't know how much he has to spend. But like a vintage Datejust, which
you sold Radwood, so
or something like that. Or like
I actually know how much he has to spend, but I'm not going to talk about it. Sorry, Brad.
Can I piggyback that and say, like, you know, I agree with you. Like, working in the automotive industry for 20 plus years and, like, being specifically in the kind of the high-end and luxury segment of the industry for most of my career, it's like, you know, everyone judges you by your watch. And when I said earlier that I have a Rolex, but I can't afford it, it's because, I mean, I could afford a Rolex if that was a priority, right? But one of my old bosses gave me a 50th anniversary sub back like a year or two after I got it in 2007. It was gifted to me. Like company used to give Rolexes out and even, you know, Omegas and Breitlings, like all kinds of cool watches out every year to like our top dealers. Right. So 1 year, 2007, I kicked ass. Like I did all this shit, like, you know, like launched a magazine, like designed body kits, just crushed. And I got a 50th anniversary sub. I can never remember. That's the Kermit, not the Hulk, right? Is that right?
No, but it's going to be like, but if you can, if you have a lower, and this is for more than just your question, but if you have a lower price point, have a watch with a story, like the Jeff, you still with us, right? Okay, yeah. So like this, the Seiko, the 1970 Seiko 6139 Sever, which is nicknamed after doomed, ill-fated French F1 driver Francois Sever.
Sacre bleu!
That story. Because then it also shows that you're a man of culture, you know, and you took that time to learn that story. It's not just it's not just a Shinola that was trendy,
right,
or an Omega Swatch collaboration. It's something with a story that you can, that people love stories behind
for the sure.
Watch but anything.
Let me finish my story. My story is bad. That company, that boss is like, you know, a dark period in my life. So I never wear that watch because it reminds me of that. And it's like, yeah, I was rewarded for something incredible that I did, that I pulled off or whatever. But I'm just like, I just get a gross feeling when I wear it. I never got papers. I got the box. But like, you know, it's like a watch like is a statement piece. And that watch, especially nowadays, is a statement piece. And I'm like, I don't want to be that dude walking around. Like, you know, it's just.
That's the story.
I want to sell it. I want to sell it, but I'm like, what should I replace it with? Like, I'd like to get like one or two,
money.
Two cool watches out of the deal. Yeah, I know, money. Man. But like, you know, I want money. Something less like flashy. Like, you know, I'm not comfortable wearing anything of value, even driving anything of value in Los Angeles these days. Like, you get
the
fucking
rise,
followed home, you
the...
get fucking, you know, jumped and you know, if you're sitting
dude,
at
people
a cafe,
are, people are following people.
Like, drive. You'll go to Rodeo Drive and you'll be fine.
People are following people home to steal their mountain bikes.
Yeah.
That they see in the roof of their car, which is crazy.
Right.
But you should get that appraised because Rolex prices are like air-cooled Porsche prices.
Right.
Yeah, you should get that appraised and flip that bitch out because fuck that.
You have a story there to tell on that, and that was you were a fucking badass. You did all this stuff. I mean, clearly, you're known in the automotive community. It's not like you're a random person. Like, you have this history, and you won it for doing awesome shit in the automotive community. Like, that's the story. I would tell that story if I owned that watch.
In
the automotive community. Seriously.
You know, we are judged so instantly. Like, I found out after the fact that I got a job. I got one job almost entirely because I showed up wearing that watch like to a couple different like events and stuff, and it was like, oh well, here's this guy that can, you know, talk shitty drift cars and like, you know, muscle cars, and he shows up wearing a Rolex, and I was just like, oh, like,
yeah,
that, like, knowing that I was judged based on that, as though I went out and procured that watch and I bought that watch and I was like this serious watch enthusiast when I'm not necessarily. Like, I like nice watches. I know something about watches, but like, I also haven't found my own identity in the watch culture. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to be known by this. Like, you know, Farrah and I were probably the only two dudes that owned Fox Bodies and had that watch. Like, he commented at, like, we met for the first time at Radwood 2018 or whatever, when in Orange County. And, like, he came up and he was just like, oh, dude. And I was like, yeah, I know. You have the same watch. Like, trust me, I know. And it was just like, you know, it's kind of like a fraternal thing. So that was cool. But I feel like more often than not, like, I would be judged by that watch. And, like, you know, assumptions would be made. And I'm just like, dude, I'm just a car guy. Like, you know, I got this as a gift. And I'm really not even that stoked on it. Like, It was, I don't know. It's just been like a weird, like not shameful thing, but it's just something that like I don't really celebrate. And I'm just like, I would like to trade this for one or more things that, you know, I actually would enjoy and like, you know, have interest in. But I just haven't figured out what that is.
We're going to follow up. We're going to follow up on your watch adventure as you go to sell this, because it's going to be like the project car stuff when we talk about, like, all right, where's Ron's Rolex?
Like last year when I saw like I saw some selling for like 20,000 plus, and I was just like, yo, that's my boat. Like,
because what other companies are like that? You know what I mean? Where it's like that instantly recognizable status symbol. There's not, and you don't know, you can find, like, my mom is not into watches at all. And if I'm like, I got a Rolex, she'd be like, how did you afford that? Right. You know, like, she immediately knows.
It's like showing up in a Mercedes or a Bentley or a Rolls Royce. It's just like, you know, certain assumptions are made, and it's just like, yo, that's not me.
Yeah.
Like,
you can show up in a paddock and like 8 times more than that Rolex,
right?
And no one would give it a second glance.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Audemars, they won't know what the Audemars, like a Royal Oak. Yeah. They won't know that shit but they see the Rolex 100%.
Right.
Blancpain even. All right, Matthew, at Plays with Cars. Nick's Trooper versus your Montero, which one has the better off-road misadventure story?
I know that guy.
He's gonna help me install my stereo, actually.
Oh, shit. All right.
I don't have a great off-road misadventure story for the Montero because it is always on fucking point. So how about your Trooper
misadventure? There was, when I grew up in Columbia, Maryland, there was this thing called the Valley, and it was like in Columbia, Maryland, it's weird. You have all these like trails, these paved little like bike trails with these little, because it's a pre-planned community, and you have all these like playgrounds and crap like that. And this thing, so it's like public land, but you're not supposed to drive a car on them because they're smaller, but you can. And the Valley was like this 45-degree incline down and up. And I did it with the Trooper. It took me 4 times, and it may or may not be the reason the clutch gave out.
Sure.
Within the next month. But I did it, and I had 3 people in the back and 1 person sitting shotgun.
Okay, that's no fucking how it,
alcohol may or may not have played a role.
Oh boy.
Just saying.
Yeah.
It probably didn't for our listeners. I would never do something like that.
Sure.
But this was, I was 17, I think, at the time. So that was one of the more PG, but there's a lot. Like I installed a switch up front. I think I talked about this before, that turned off the license plate light.
Oh yeah.
Went off road, and this time that I talk about this, the Valley, it actually saved my ass, because one of the neighbors came out, and they were like with a flashlight, and they were trying to get like my license plate before we drove away.
Right. Matthew has some other questions. He asks, why, this is a good question, why do Citizen watches not have the same vintage demand that Seiko does?
Yeah. Honestly, it's, and I've had this question before, it's because there hasn't been enough people doing research on them. And they're not finding these legends that people that have found with Seiko, like the Pogue, like Siver, like the Arnie, the Seiko, the 1980s Seiko H558 that Arnold Schwarzenegger wore in literally like every movie from from Predator all the way to Terminator 2.
Wow.
At least he wore it on set. Someone
found, because the Terminator doesn't need a watch.
Internal clocks, you know, that kind of thing. So no, I mean, and I haven't really, the only Citizen I've seen that done with, and it was recent, and that was when Brad Pitt wore it was a gold bullhead on like one of these leather bun straps, because the gold bullhead itself, it's called the Citizen Challenge Timer. That it has an 8110 caliber movement in it that Citizen made to compete with the Seiko 6139.
Oh.
But it's smaller though, so it's like you got to put it on like that bun strap to make it look more manly. And if you remember Brad Pitt's character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's a manly ass dude. So they put that on him. And prices like tripled overnight. We would sell that all day, every day, for $300-$400. It peaked at like a couple thousand, and it's still $1,200 about.
Damn.
Gold. Nobody likes gold these days.
I do. Depends on the application. Johnny Lieberman asks if you have an automatic dart tuna lying around.
Oh, what?
Yeah, Johnny Lieberman wants to know if you have an automatic Darth tuna lying around.
he was just in Houdinki for his, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he, like, drove around in, because that's, like, his favorite watch, if memory serves. I don't, actually. Tunas, I've never personally, in my own personal collection, I've never really got into them because, like, I'm not a big dude, you know, and the Tunas are massive. Like, even the Arnie that I mentioned earlier, you know, it looks like this dainty little thing on you know, the Terminator's wrist. But on me, it takes up, like, my whole damn wrist.
Really?
So, like, well, first of all, you know, Schwarzenegger's massive ass, dude.
Little bitch wrist myself. I can't pull off massive watches.
I think this one's about the same. This is a Seiko 6619. It's one of those MACV SOG, like the Military Assistance Group Vietnam, Special Operations Group had these in during the Vietnam conflict. But no, I mean, I don't. I've sourced them for clients, for customers before. You know, we've got some dealers that we work with pretty regularly in Japan, and that's where you're going to find them. They're not going to be, for the most part, here in the United States, or they'll be. So, sorry, Johnny, I don't have one.
I can go back and forth, because this thing's tiny. This thing's only like 37 mils.
Yeah, that's about what this one is, too.
I can go bigger. I want to go bigger.
I like those, because they're super comfortable. Like the military, yeah. The military ones, like the 4.6734s that they made for DOD in the 60s and 70s, crazy comfortable. I'll put it on a NATO. Yeah.
Nice. Kevin S. at LF9 Body, wanting to buy a vintage Accutron Space View. Any suggestions for where to purchase a historical oddball? I mean, I think we have a suggestion. Are there any other Chronotech dead ends worth exploring? Chronotech.
Oh, man. So the Space View is very much in demand, but there is a really big it's called Frankenwatch danger out there, because you can take it. It's the Accutron movement in there. So this is like that transitional technology from mechanical watch to full-on quartz. So, like, you know, with mechanical, you have that smooth sweep of the second hand. With quartz, like tick, tick, tick. The Accutron, and Seiko had this with their Astron and some other movements. It said it's kind of quartz. It uses a battery, but it still has some mechanical parts in it, i.e. it's transitional. And it will do that smooth hand sweep. They only made it for a couple years. It's incredibly hard to find competent watchmakers to work on the Accutron, so that's a danger. I have that. You actually see, you probably saw it. I don't have it right in front of me, but behind me it was the Omega, or I'm sorry, the Beluva Accutron Astronaut, which they issued it to pilots, spy plane pilots to use during testing, but it uses that same movement. Awesome. They're hard to service, and like mine was a GMT. And I gave up trying to find a decently priced GMT movement when mine crapped out. So I just bought a non-GMT and threw it on there and removed the GMT hand. Because I still love the watch, but I'm like, I don't want to mess with it. It's too expensive. So that's a danger.
Wow.
We can do it. You know, obviously I'm going to, you know, tout my business. But, like, it's hard to find someone that can, because there's a lot of danger on eBay. A lot of people will take ones that aren't Space View and convert them into Space View by literally removing the dial. They'll just take the damn dial out, because the Space View, it's like there's no dial on it per se. It just shows the movement, which is badass. It looks really cool. And they'll do that, and they'll sell it as it's a Space View, and it's not
that
a real
sounds
Space
awesome.
View. Yeah. So that's a danger. They're not
dicks.
There's a couple watchmakers that will specialize in servicing those movements, and it's not cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. At Jeff_Cunny, do box and papers in the Seiko world matter as much as they do in the Rolex world?
Hell no, and I love it for that.
Right.
Quite frankly.
I thought that was going to be the answer.
We get these questions a lot, actually. So with Seiko, people bought them to be used as designed, i.e. to get the shit beat out of them. And that's why it can be hard to find, like, a new old stock Seiko, you know, from the 70s and the 60s. They're out there, but they're hard to find. But with papers, it's almost impossible. Like, every now and again, you will find it, and it will definitely be a big price premium for that. But Rolex, people knew back in the day, and they would buy that, and they would take the papers, and they'd throw it in a safe and just leave it. And then you have, like, everything's immaculate, it looks amazing, like that. Even, well, they're still hard to find, but I swear to God, I feel like you can find them more readily with Rolex, and even really Omega Speedmaster professionals, than you can with Seiko. Like, the other... I think it was a month ago, we sold, it was actually quartz. It was from the early 80s. It was a Seiko 7828 7090 was the Regatta watch, and they're super rare. And we found one with, it had box, it had papers, it had the original receipt, it had everything. It added a $1,000 premium for that, for all that paperwork, and the dial was, it was like new old stock. It was an amazing example. Wow. I've never since or even before then found one in that kind of condition. It was rare.
Sure.
So rare to find that paperwork. So no, it doesn't matter. You're not going to find it, honestly. I don't think they're that important. Not a lot of people will ask for it. In the Rolex world, people will, that's a massive plus if you can find that.
Right.
But really, people in the Seiko world, they don't tend to care about it as much.
No.
I honestly don't care about it as much.
Instagram questions. Lynn Woodward, is there any truth to watches having the same parts, just more money for the branding?
Yes. Actually, case in point, contemporary watches. So it was this massive controversy in Switzerland maybe a couple of years ago. Swatch used to provide movements for the almost the entire contemporary watch community. So like LVMH, which again, I said, it's Hublot, it's Zenith, it's Tag Heuer, it's Richemont, like, I think it's Richemont. Yeah, Richemont. Their movements were Swatch movements. Like some of them from the Swatch group. That doesn't mean they're quartz. They could be mechanical movements.
Right.
They were made by the Swatch group, the overarching, like, and it would be like Ford making the engines for Chevy, which in like every other watch American, right. American, you know, car manufacturer.
Or
like
Ford making the engines for Aston Martin.
clearly. So there's some inbreeding, if you will, there, but it'd be like one car company making the engines for the entire car industry.
Right.
It's crazy. So like, Swatch finally was like, look, we don't want to do this anymore. Because Swatch was one of the few companies that had this in-house, like, watch manufacturing. They made their movements in-house. Seiko has always made their movements in-house. And there's very few companies that do that. So Swatch basically was like, look, we don't want to do this anymore. And, like, LVMH got angry and they took them to court. And then, like, Switzerland was like, no, you can't do it right away. You have to wait a couple years to allow them to build up their in-house capability, which seemed crazy to me.
Right.
But that's, yeah, it's American capitalism.
I mean, you know, that's got to be, watchmaking has to be a huge part of their GDP. Like, it's what they're known for. Like, they've got to protect that industry at all costs.
So, yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. Historically, before, like I said, the quartz crisis, there was some of that. There was less. Sometimes American watch companies would use Swiss movements. Because it was and remains a selling point.
For sure.
Made on the dial, even when it's meaningless, but still has, you know, it's still a selling point. But yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Right? Is there like a criteria to being labeled a Swiss movement, like bourbon? Like
you keep going on this topic. I'm gonna step out for 1 second. You guys keep going. Okay.
No, there is a whole ass like legal definition that Swiss courts have come up with. It has to be a percentage of Swiss parts to qualify for that label. Cause it used to be the Wild West. It used to be actually, I haven't seen anything recently, but there used to be controversies that some of Tag Heuer parts were being manufactured in like China and then shipped surreptitiously to Switzerland.
Sure.
So they could have, I could be speaking out of my rear on this, but I swear to God, I saw something like about this like 5 years ago. Tag Heuer, please don't sue me. I could be wrong.
Right, and I'm just curious. I imagine there's got to be like a parts content, like percentage, plus assembly and like quality of materials, like that. Yep. That all has to be like considered 100%. for that label, right?
I would imagine there's a whole legal cottage industry,
right,
in Switzerland, just around watches. And no, there is a legally defined percentage in the laws there. As far as what can qualify as a Swiss watch. So, yeah, no, 100%. That's definitely the thing.
Yeah, I visited Geneva, maybe.
But I didn't want to pause it.
Huh?
Because we know when we pause, it breaks.
No interruptions.
No.
We just let it roll.
So, like, I just got to go. All right. next question. From Type R. Kelly. Does it bother you watching a movie or TV show to see a vehicle in park while moving? Most recently was an Ozark, but the other one that comes to mind is Captain America Winter Soldier. Shout out, by the way, speaking of Ozark, I'm on the final season, and your boy
final
was in that episode. Final
yeah, dude. Fucking Killer Mike had the best cameo in the history of television, as far as I'm concerned. And, like, you know, Killer Mike is my boy. Like, you know, we're friends. We're working on a few things and projects together. But, like, I knew he was going to be featured on the season, but I had no idea, like, what that cameo would play out as. But, like, I love that he was featured as himself. He didn't play a character. He just played himself.
Yeah.
He was recognized, you know, as the hip-hop legend that he is. But my favorite part about that is that he brought his, like, management team and friends into the episode with him. So it's like, okay, obviously we're hiring you as talent, but, yeah, like, the three guys that he's sitting at the table with during that episode are his manager, his, like, road manager, and, like, his producer friend. So his homeboy Bear, his manager Will, and Cuz Lightyear, who's, like, his production, one of his production partners, like, and Cuz is a rapper as well. And, like, it was just so cool to see all of them, as opposed to extras, stand-ins, other randoms. It's like, you know, Mike is just always so inclusive and brings all of his, like, friends and family in whenever he can. You know, it's like he brought all of his kids out to Coachella.
It was cool. Like, it was cool. I was very excited to see it.
Yeah. He's known them forever, too. Guarantee he's known them forever.
Yeah, yeah. It was super cool. So.
Ron's
audio was going slow.
Yeah, I'm not talking.
Your audio slowed down. We weren't trying to jump in on you.
My bad. Sorry about that.
No. It's his internet. It's his internet.
I'm actually slacking on Ozark. My sister is like, why have you not started watching it? Like, I'm watching Outer Range right now. I just started watching it. It's pretty good.
Is it good? But, I wanted to see that.
But, you know, it is. I mean, Josh Brolin's. I love Josh.
Yeah, Josh Brolin's
like,
great.
And I've been, since I moved out to SoCal, I've been on, like, a Western kick. Shout out to Nicholas Gonzalez, actually, in Borrego, that's coming out on Netflix on the 14th. He plays, like, a... It's like this, like, I guess there's, like, it's on the border with Mexico, and I think he plays, like, a border patrol agent, but it's, like, this whole drama. Like, he's a great actor. Like, I love that. But, no, I've been really watching the hell out of Atlanta, because the new season came out.
Yes.
Right. I love Donald Glover. The nuance that he builds in each episode. Totally. That, I mean, look, I'm like, and I've talked about this before, we talked about this last time, like, I've been involved in the hip hop community forever. Like, I love that. Like, but, like, there's so many, like, inner things. Like, if you're a white person and you have no clue of black culture, you're not going to get half the stuff that he has in there. Like, obviously, right. I'm not black, but, like, I'm missing a shit ton of stuff too. But, like, some of the inside stuff he puts there, I'm just like, oh my God, that's amazing. This show is just brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. I posted something a few weeks ago. I just think it's, like, the most brilliantly and beautifully written show in. I can't say television history, but, like, in my television consumption history, it's just it's otherworldly. Like, it's just so on point for a young half black dude from Atlanta. Like, it's just, like, it's so, like, evocative of the experience of growing up in Atlanta.
Nice.
Which I'm like, I'll never know that clearly as growing up as a white person. When we talked about the cops being pulled over, a couple of my friends, like my friend Ned, I was talking about, he is black. And like when we grew up, like there was like a distinct, like we would get pulled over more when I was with black friends than when I was with white friends. And it would always escalate. I'd be like the only white person in the car. The cops would always have their guns pulled. Like, mm-hmm. And this is in Maryland. I'm not saying all cops are like this, but that was the experience that I had with that. And I was just like, man, I don't even
want
to get into that.
Sure. And to answer your question, type R. Kelly. Yeah, we get annoyed when we see vehicles.
Type R. Kelly is one of the greatest
TV shows. Total tangent.
Evan J. Cruz asks, are there any notable Seikos from the 90s that are worth pursuing? I mean, I think the answer is lots of them, right?
Yeah. No, we're getting to that era now, and it's like this sliding scale of what is vintage, because as we get older, clearly some watches that we wouldn't consider vintage 10 years ago now are considered as such. You know, when I started this business 10 years ago, Shit, 10 years this month, actually. I didn't even think about that. I got to do a giveaway, clearly. Anyway, but no, I mean, it was like the mid-80s were like the extent of what I would consider vintage. But now I would consider the 90s to be that. But the problem with the 90s, and you saw this with Tag Heuer as well, the design cues, I'm sorry, they're garish, they're ugly. I'm not a fan. There's a lot of two-tone. I'm not a fan of two-tone. That's just me. So were there a lot of there are a lot of watches, clearly. Are there any I like? There's not. My personal taste, obviously, and that's going to differ.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's – but I will say there's probably a lot of value to be had there because what you continue to see, like Seiko from the 70s increase in price and 80s, I haven't seen it with the 90s at all. So who knows?
So what vintage Seikos are undervalued right now?
I say it's still 80s to a limited extent. We talked about this briefly before. Like the 7005 series from the 60s and 70s are still great values. They're mechanical. A lot of stuff from the 80s, like the, I would say even like the 7828 I mentioned earlier, some of their lesser known varieties, because they made like a couple dozen varieties of that movement, like different dials and stuff like that. The rare ones are, they're stable, but they're up there. But like the more common varieties, I think, like the black dials and the white dials, you see those a lot more. They're pretty decent. I think they're undervalued. I think they will go up.
Sure.
But you get into this and it's like, then it does get into other turf. Like, are you buying because you love it? Are you buying because you're investing in it? So it's like, and both are fine, but they're going to be different endpoints.
Right. Right. All right. I'm going to say, I think we covered a lot of ground.
I have one
go ahead.
Question for Nick.
Okay.
Before my grandfather passed away, like he had this watch as long as I was alive. But before he passed away, he gave me, you said Rado. I would have pronounced it Rado because I've never heard the brand like spoken about.
I say Rado too. I think that was a slip up.
Do
my
you?
Point.
Okay. All right. Anyway, like Rado. He gave me a Rado that was like polished, you know, and like yeah. It had some weird aftermarket band on it, like some stretch band. It was like the band was super cheap, but like the watch was legit and I either lost it or it was stolen. I can't remember, but I was in college and like I clearly didn't deserve that watch at the time. But I go on their website and like I see that they basically still sell that same watch in a bunch of different iterations. But like I wonder if it's – would I don't care about value, but
– breaking up a little bit on my end.
Yeah. No, oh, mine too.
I was saying I don't care about necessarily the value of the watch, like, you know, as an appreciating asset. But if I were to try and reacquire that watch, would it make more sense to just buy it new or to try and find a vintage version of that watch? You know, as you know, is that something that's like sacred or, you know, just cool? Is there any difference in construction and engineering and materials or?
So you're saying, just to recap, you're saying like there was a vintage watch that you got and they did Rado like reissue it?
Well, I mean I see it like basically the same watch available for sale new on their website, or at least you know aesthetically it's the same watch, you know. Yeah. I can't tell the difference, but you know, it's, I've been separated from the watch 15 years myself, so I don't remember all of the details, but I think it had day and date. So I think I found the same watch on their website for sale new today. Should I just buy that or should I, like, you know, is it something that's, I don't want to say I'm not worried about the value, but is it something that's cooler yeah. and more, you know, more authentic and, you know, just cooler to find like a vintage version of that same watch?
I mean, it's really, so there's a couple questions here. So it's like, what are you going to, if you're going to use it for like some sort of like you're going to wear it in during like activities and shit, like you're hiking or
sure.
whatever. Like
I don't hike. So don't worry about that. Like I'm not wearing any watch hiking, mountain biking. Like this watch is not going to, it's not going to see any dangerous activity. Don't worry about that.
I mean, there will be a difference in engineering. Like,
yeah.
Like I said before, like the machine tolerances and the technology has advanced wonderfully since
sure.
the 60s and 70s. So, and Rado was something that it's a watch that's not crazy expensive, so
right.
it'd be easier to buy it new, and it would be, I would say it would be a higher quality
okay.
watch, and it would it lasts longer. Now, is the watch that you're looking at, is it quartz or is it mechanical?
It was mechanical because I remember, like, what I loved about it was shaking and that, like, you know, shaking it to wind it and, like, you know, that, like gyro movement, like, feeling that. Like, that was my favorite thing about that watch. So, again, I don't know if that's, like, that.
Yeah.
You know, that carries over to the new watches, if that's, you know, still the case, or, you know, I don't know anything about the brand, so I don't know, like, how it's evolved or if they've, like, you know, cheapened, you know, their movements and, or if, like, all that stuff is still true.
Is the reissue that you found, is it mechanical?
I imagine it is. Like, it's been a couple years since I really looked into this. I was really, like, thinking about getting, like, replacing that watch for my 40th birthday a couple years ago, so it's been a couple years, but I imagine that it was.
I would find out if the reissue is mechanical, because if that's what you love about it, then I would just get the reissue, quite frankly, because it's the least amount of trouble, I think. And you're gonna, what you're gonna get, you're gonna know you're getting something that's not, like, been messed with in any ways. You won't need to get it serviced right away.
Right.
You're gonna be good for, like, 5 years until, and that's the other thing, like, with the new watches, also the newer serviced watches, the lubricants they use in those are, like, much better than they were back in the day, and they will last much longer than crap from the 70s and 80s. And, like, unless you know the ref number, the model number, it'd be hard to find that vintage one. You're going to be forced to, like, literally you're going to throw some search terms in Google Image, and you're going to be plugging through that. Some people have the time to do that. Some people don't.
Right.
And sometimes if they don't, they'll come to us, and then we'll do that legwork. But no, like I said, Rado is, I mean, that's owned by Swatch Group.
Right.
So, you know, it's full circle on that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I'm biased towards vintage, but in this instance, I mean, if it looks like the one that you are after and it's mechanical and you're getting that oscillating, you know, asymmetric weight in there, charging it, and that you love, go for it by all means.
Cool. I appreciate it.
There you go. So we've had a lot to talk about. Nick, can you plug your store for us?
Of course. So online we are DC Vintage Watches, and that's www.dcvintagewatches.com. You can find us on Instagram under the same thing, at DC Vintage Watches. We have a couple of other pages. We have one that's specific for the DMV, which is DC, Maryland, Virginia. And we have one specific for Los Angeles, and those are, like, at DCVW underscore Los Angeles or DCVW underscore DMV. We also have a page. It's DCVW underscore Faco Friday, where we, like, roast these. We don't name and shame. That's not us. But we will roast the hell out of some of these fake-ass watches that are sold on eBay every Friday. 9 slides and a pithy meme making fun of Faco watch sellers. Because, honestly, That platform does nothing to discourage.
Right.
Real quick, I actually had a customer reach out, and they had bought a watch on eBay with their vaunted authenticity guarantee. That shit was fake. It was a very good fake, but they showed me the dial, because they had their watchmaker take the dial off, and on Seiko dials in the back, they'll have a 2-digit number that is the month and the year that it was made, and if it doesn't have that number, for the most part, it's a fake dial, and it was a fake dial. It was a fake Troupogue, which can sell for $3,000 to $4,000 if it's legit, and it was not. And eBay said it was authentic, and it was not. And I gave them the talking points. I said, go back to eBay. This is what you tell them. This is what you register the case as, and they won their case. They got their money back.
Nice.
But sorry, tangent, I do that. That's us.
That's awesome.
That's cool, yeah.
That's awesome. You know where to find Ron and I. So we don't need to rehash all that shit. Nick, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And for everybody else, we will see you on the next episode. And there you go.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.